Hello everyone, Neil Battaglia, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show, episode 91. Today I speak to Venkat Iyer. He's the author of an amazing new book called Moong Over Microchips. So this book is about his extraordinary 14-year journey from quitting his highly paid job at IBM to taking up organic farming without any experience. Amazing stuff. So in this podcast, we talk about why he quit, the first 6 months dealing with corruption, tough clients, and growing his first crop. We also talk about the reality of farming in India. We also talk about discovering fresh air, organic food, being bitten by snakes to getting up at 5:30 a.m. And finally, we talk about this being made into a movie and which famous Bollywood actor would play him. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Venkat. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Hi.
You are the author of Moong Over Microchips. What's the book about, please?
This book is actually about my transition from an urban techie. I was working with IBM,
yeah,
and I quit my job and started my own organic farm, mm-hmm, in about 100 kilometers from Mumbai in India. And I have been living at my farm for the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. And this book is the story of my journey from the city to the village and how I started doing farming. Mm-hmm. That's, and also the adventures that I went through when I moved from city to the village.
Mm-hmm. Sounds exciting. Let's go back to the start then. What inspired you to do it? What inspired you to quit your job?
Well, I was quite comfortable. I mean, I was working for IBM, one of the best companies in the world,
yeah,
and everything was going well. I was a project manager. I had large projects under me, a huge team, etc., etc. And but then, you know, there was still something missing, mm-hmm, and I wanted to do something which would give me some more of a challenge, you know, mm-hmm, and maybe change my lifestyle. So I started looking for a job. And I went to a lot of headhunters. I applied in a lot of websites. And during the course, I realized that if you are a project manager, everybody wants a project manager. Hmm. So I was getting jobs which were the same.
Okay.
There was nothing new about it other than probably my colleagues, my office, and maybe the salary, you know. Mm-hmm. So at this point of time, my wife, Meena, who's a journalist, mm-hmm, was writing a book on organic cotton in India. And in the course of her research, she used to go to these villages and stay with the farmers and come back and narrate all stories about these farmers. I myself am from the city, so I had no, yeah, idea about farming or about the village life. It was very fascinating for me to hear her stories. Mm-hmm. And I used to be very, very keen on knowing how they lived and, you know, what did they do, etc., etc. And somehow, over a period of time, I got interested in this topic of organic farming. Mm-hmm. And I did up some reading. I also read her research. And then, one day, I just asked her, I said, what do you think if I became a farmer? Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, she said, why not? Mm-hmm. She said, if 65% of our country can do farming, mm-hmm, why can't you do it? And probably you'll do it better because you're educated and you're a project manager. So, yeah, of course, we can do it. And that's how it all started. Mm-hmm. And instead of looking for a new job, I started looking for land. Mm-hmm. So that's how the story began.
Mm-hmm. And you say you're doing it 14 years. How's it going so far then?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great, really great. And I initially I had to learn a lot because obviously I didn't know anything about farming.
Yeah.
So the village around where I live, I used to take the help of the elders and also the people living in the village, ask them what to do, how to do. Mm. And also I traveled a lot in India to visit a lot of organic farmers, mm-hmm, and try and understand what they were trying to do and how they were doing it. Mm. And over a period of time, yes, I did pick up along the way. And now it's quite comfortable. I know what to plant when, mm-hmm, and how to handle the various problems that arise in farming. Mm-hmm. And well, the going is good, and we just love it here. Mm-hmm. We don't miss the city at all.
So going back to the early days, what was your colleague's reaction when you told them that you were going to be a farmer?
Yeah, when I shared it with my colleagues in IBM, and I told them that this is an idea, Neil, you won't be. It is really surprising. Not a single person in my team told me that it was a stupid idea.
Okay.
They all said that it was a great idea and you must go ahead. So I asked them, I said, if you think it is such a great idea, how come none of you guys are doing it? Why are you telling me to do it? So that's when they came up with various reasons why they couldn't do. Like someone said, you know, I just got a mortgage on my house. Another said, no, I have old parents. A third guy said, you know, I have put my son in the best school in Bombay. And you know what is the fees? You think I can afford it by farming? So there were reasons why they didn't want to do, but they all wanted to do it. And that gave me a lot of courage. And this one of my colleagues was there, Rajesh. He actually gave me a very good advice. He said that, yes, what you're thinking of is great, but have you planned your financials? And that's when we started planning our financials. And it was a big help because we planned it out. We knew how much money we had. We knew how much we could spend. And we kept aside money for medical emergencies. You know, all this kind of planning we did. And well, the colleague, my colleagues did help me. And the funny thing is the book is actually because of them. What happened was after I quit IBM, they were very keen on knowing what was happening with me.
Okay.
So they said, you must keep us updated.
Yeah.
So I used to send them emails about what's happening at the farm and also what's happening in my life, you know. And slowly the group became bigger and bigger, like, you know, relatives, friends, acquaintances, all wanting to get on the list, you know, which I was sending out of the email. And over a period of time, some people came back saying that your experience is so beautiful and so exciting. Why don't you write a book about it?
Okay, yeah.
Well, I've never written a book. So I sort of dismissed it and said, this is not something I want to do. Then over a period of time, my wife, who has already written a couple of books, she encouraged me and she said, there is nothing great in writing a book, just write it and then we'll see who publishes it. And that's when I started writing. And well, after a period of time, it was ready.
So,
and thanks to Penguin, it got published.
Yeah, it's got good reviews as well. You know, it's got top class reviews. Reading Goodreads, I think it was like 4.5 out of 5. So yes, it's gone really well.
Yes.
You must be pleased with the reaction and the reviews.
Yes, in fact, you know, I have given my email ID in the book also,
okay.
And I have been getting a lot of mail, and not only mail, people have been coming to visit the farm.
Oh,
people
nice.
Have come. The people are calling from far away places like Delhi and Bangalore, saying that they want to do something like this and asking for my guidance. And the people closer by, of course, are just dropping in. I get about a couple of visitors every week, you know, who just come to learn, to see. And some just say that we just want to come and see what you're doing. That's it.
So
the response has been very, very exciting.
So let's talk about the first 6 months of your farming career then. What was that like? What were the main obstacles and challenges?
So I actually, when I came here in 2004 and I bought the land, I just decided to copy whatever the village was doing because I knew that I didn't know anything. So I just followed what they did, except for one thing. They used to add chemicals and I never added chemicals.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to add. I want to do it organically.
Mm-hmm.
So the first year went, first couple of years actually went in a lot of experimentation. I just followed what they did and watched the plant grow, understand the cycle, the season, and obviously the climate change, which is affecting all of us, and the erratic weather condition. I bought the land in around February 2004. I was not at all ready to do anything. I wanted to first understand, learn, study, etc., etc. The local villager who helped me buy the land, he was very insistent, saying that this is the season to plant moong, that is the green gram. And he said, you have to do it. I was completely lost. I said, no, I don't understand anything. So he said, no, you just go ahead. I will help you. So he got a tiller and he told me, I don't have the seeds. You'll have to go and buy the seeds. So he sent me to a nearby place in Gujarat called Surat, where he said, you will get the moong seeds. So I went there, got the moong seeds, and just threw it in the field after he had tilled the land. And you won't believe it. In 60 days, I got a huge crop of 300 kilos of moong. And I was in a state of shock. I'd never seen so much moong in my life. And also it gave me a lot of confidence that I grew it without using any chemicals, pesticides, or any inputs. It was just the seed thrown into the land. So that gave us a lot of confidence.
And then you tried to sell it. Talk about that. Your first experience of trying to sell this.
Well, that's a huge story which I've written about in the book, that is selling the moong. We first distributed it to our friends, relatives, acquaintances, to the people staying in our society. And well, it just didn't seem to get over, you know. And we had no idea how to store it. So the only option was to sell it off. So I went to the nearest shopkeeper in Mumbai and I asked him, will you buy this moong from me? So, he said, okay, give me a sample and then I will decide. So he took a bit of sample and after a couple of days, he came back and he said, yes, I will buy it from you. So I said, how much will you pay me? So he was willing to give me a very small figure, about 12 or 13 rupees per kilo. And I thought that it was too low because he was that time selling it at around 28 rupees or something, which was like, you know, almost double the figure he was offering me. So I told him, I said, "You, by the way, do you know this is organic?" So he just didn't understand. He said, "I don't know what you're talking about. It's just moong. I don't know what is organic." So there was no question of selling it to him. So we said that, okay, maybe it's a better idea if we look at people who are into selling organic products. So we looked around, we searched, and then finally we found somebody who was doing business in organic. So we approached them and they said that, okay, we will take the moong, but you have to come and give it to a godown, which was about a few kilometers from Bombay. So I said, okay, I had no choice anyway. And besides, they were offering me 16 rupees, which was better than what the shopkeeper was giving.
Yeah.
So I drove all the way to the godown and I gave the moong. And it took almost a month of repeated callings before I actually got the money for it. And when the money came, I realized that it was a rupee less than what they had promised me. So I called them back and I said, hello, you told me some other figure. You're giving me something else. And they came up with an excuse saying, no, but we had to clean it again. And these are the labor charges. We're very sorry, but we deducted 1 rupee. I said, fine, that's fine. You won't believe it. The next month, we got a flyer from the same person selling my moong at 38 rupees, which was double of what they gave me. So that's how it is. So I plant it, I water it, I harvest it, I go and give it to them, and they make 100% profit. The trader makes 100% profit. So that's the reality. And from that day onwards, we decided we will never, ever sell to a trader. We will sell directly.
Directly, yeah.
That's the only way to crack this. The middleman has to be cracked. So that's the scenario in India, you know, and I suppose everywhere.
Also in the book, you mentioned bribery. It seems common in farming in India. Is that right?
To a certain extent, maybe it's true. But then, you know, in the city, we feel cocooned from this whole exposure. Because, you know, there are things in the city which just happen. I mean, let's say there is a problem with your electric connection. You don't have to bribe anyone. You just have to call the call center and the engineer will come and fix it. But when you come to the rural scenario here, even if you have to get the work done, which is, let us say, it's supposed to be done, you still have to pay. So if I have a problem with the power and I call the power lineman, he will come, but he will expect me to give him something. You know, that's something which hits you hard when you come to the village. For everything, you want a paper, let's say a document which proves that you have the land, which you, let's say you need it for some purpose. You go to the authority, he's supposed to give it to you, but he will still take 100 bucks. He will give it to you, but he will expect 100 bucks. Now, that's the level of corruption that is there in the villages. And the funny thing is everybody pays. Nobody says, anything. They just give it. So when I first started saying that this is not correct, and he is supposed, that is his job to give you this document, why are you paying him? So the answer was very simple. They said, no, it's okay. After all, he's taking only 100 bucks. It's fine. Let it be, you know, let it go. So that's the thing, you know, so it's a battle. So if I say no, I am the only lone person who is saying no. So then it becomes very difficult. And then that the, everybody is giving, why aren't you giving? You know, so it's actually a battle every time you have to pay money to get something which is legally yours to be done, you know. And it's a very sad state of affairs.
Well, you mentioned farming. What's like the state of the Indian farming industry then? Is it in a good shape or a bad shape? What's your view?
Right now what has happened, currently the situation in India is there is heavy land fragmentation. When I say land fragmentation, the individual who is holding land is in a very small area. So therefore, they are not able to market their produce because of the logistical problem. And that's where the middleman steps in. He comes to the village and he buys from 10 villagers at a very low cost and then transports it to the city and then makes money. And as an individual farmer, even I cannot do that. I cannot transport things directly to the city to sell. First of all, transportation costs. Secondly, where do I sell it in the city? So that's the situation in India. The farming, yes, they are doing very well. They know how to grow crops. And okay, the monsoon is playing a lot of games nowadays in the last few years. Either it's late or it's excess, etc., etc. But that, I suppose, is because of, world over, the climate change is affecting all of us. And we can adjust to it. We have to grow crops which are suitable for climate, etc., which the farmers are doing. But where they face problem is in getting good money for their produce. And that is why today farming is not an occupation of choice in India. It is not. It is an occupation where if you don't get anything, you end up doing farming. You know, it's like that. So nobody is actually getting into it out of their own will. So that's what farming is reduced to.
Yeah. So if you have to guess, what would farming look like in like 30 years time then, in your opinion?
30 years is too far away. I'm scared to look 10 years away. Okay. 10. I'll give you a simple example. The person who works with me at the farm, he has got two children, two sons, and both his sons have never, ever come to the land. Can you believe it? One of them has done his computers, and he's working in a factory. And the other guy, he's got a fleet of vehicles, and he does the tourist business. And they never come. They don't even know how to plant the rice. They cannot identify the plants. They cannot identify the trees. And this man who's working with me is exactly my age. He's just 51 years old. He'll go on for another 10 years. I don't think he can last beyond that. I don't know what is going to happen to their land after 10 years. Who is going to farm it? Because the kids don't know. So this is a situation which is, I would say, 90% of the houses in my village. So it's scary. But at the same time, there are other opportunities which are coming up, like, for example, contract farming or corporates getting into farming or groups which are NGOs which are getting into farming, which are telling people that, okay, we will give you money if you do farming. That is happening, but it's not on a large scale. It is happening at a very small level. But I think it will improve, which is probably the hope that we have, because I don't think these kids want to do farming. If they want to do, they would have started now, you know. They haven't. So that's the scary part.
Yeah, scary. So you did this for 14 years. When was the moment that you thought that you were on the right track, that you knew it was going to work out?
Yes. Well, actually, let me be honest with you, Neil. The first year after my rice was a disaster. I mean, nothing came. I didn't even get the amount that I planted. And I lost my entire crop of pigeon pea, which I had planted, it was so bad that I went into a state of depression. I just didn't speak to anyone, and I would be always moody. And it was basically because everything was going wrong. And I felt that maybe, you know, I was a fool to do this kind of thing, you know, leave a corporate job and jump into farming. Well, it was noticed by my wife, and after a lot of prodding, I eventually burst out and told her that, yes, I am in depression. Well, we talked about it a lot, and finally she told me that it's too early for you to take a call because it's just 1 year, not even 1 year, just one season. So why are you getting depressed? Let's go ahead, you know, let's move ahead. Let's go to the next season. So the next season, which was in December 2004, is when we had to plant groundnuts. And that was a really, really good crop. I mean, it was much better than what the village got, the yield. And that's when I realized that it is a question of patience and being at it. You have to be at it, and then you will succeed. And after that, I've never, ever thought back of going back.
Are you a risk taker then? Because this sounds like a big risk in your pre-press life. Were you taking risks?
Yes, of course. In fact, being a project manager, we had made a huge risk mitigation chart in a spreadsheet, Excel spreadsheet, in which we had listed down all the risks that we thought would happen. And against that, we had put all the mitigation plans that we thought were right at that point of time. So we did do a risk mitigation exercise, and it did help us. I mean, it helped us because it makes your vision clear and it gives you the confidence that you have thought about most of the things. So what can go wrong, you know, what else can go wrong? Of course, a lot of other things do go wrong. But then by then you reached a level where you are able to handle that kind of a risk, you know. You feel that, okay, this is nothing, you know, it can be handled. And that's what helped us to go along. Yes, it was a risk considering that we had no idea about farming. So that way, if you see, yes, it was a big risk.
What's the best thing about farming then?
The best thing about farming is living with nature. Being close to nature, being in the open, under the open sky, watching the plants grow, watching the insects, the birds. I mean, the number of birds we have on the farm is phenomenal. And well, let me tell you, you're at peace when you are with nature. So there is no commuting. There is stress. I mean, it's not as if, you know, I'm not stressed. Of course, I worry about the monsoon. I worry about my crop. I worry about the insect infestation, etc. But that is good stress. It's not bad stress. And at the end of it, you know that whatever you're going through, you're going to reap the benefits. The profit is not going to an MNC. It is going to you. So that's the joy which you get when you start doing farming and, of course, growing your own food. I mean, almost everything is grown on the farm, from oils, spices and food grains, vegetables, fruits. Everything comes. Only salt, soap is something which we need to get from outside. So that
what
gives
would you say, what would you say is the most surprising thing you've learned about your, you know, farming journey?
Let me tell you, every day there is something surprising which happens and exciting which happens. I mean, there's not a day which goes without something that I've learned, and I'm still learning every day. There is it's not that I'm an expert or something, but one of the biggest things that hit me when I started living in the village and on my farm was the silence and the darkness. That is something which actually hit me, because the first day, that was in July 2004, I slept at the farm. I just couldn't sleep because it was so dark. There was no light. And there is no ambient light. There is no street light. There are no signboards. And the silence. All you can hear is some insects or some geckos going around. And in that darkness and silence, each sound makes it seem as if there is a monster. And I didn't sleep. I kept looking under the bed. I kept looking at the window. Oh, that was a really, really, really difficult night, you know. But then now I like it.
You sleep well.
Yes, of course.
What's a typical day for you then? What time do you get out of bed?
Oh, the day is, my day is more or less scheduled. I get up at around 5:30. And 5:30 in the morning, that's because the birds start chirping. So you have to get up. And then I make the food for my pets. We have two cats and one dog. So I make the food for them, then have my cup of coffee at the river. We have a river next to the farm. So I go to the river with Pepper, that my dog, and we both have coffee there. And I come back, and by around 7 o'clock, the food is cooled. So I feed them, and then I go for an hour's walk at the farm. So I walk around, I talk to the trees, I look at them, and by 8 o'clock, my Baban, the guy who works with me, he comes over, and we schedule the day. And as he goes doing his work, I come back home and we have our breakfast. After breakfast, I join him on the field till maybe about 11 o'clock, because after that, I find it difficult to work because they can work for 4 hours. I can't. My body doesn't allow me to do it. So I come back home and then we start preparing for lunch. Lunch is at around 12:45, and we take a siesta till 2 o'clock. And 2 o'clock, my man is back. Again, we decide what to do in the afternoon. And from maybe at 3 o'clock, we have a cup of tea, 3:30. And then I join him on the field till about 5:30. And 5:30, I'm back to feed the pets. And then maybe around 6 o'clock, 6:30, I go for a stroll in the village just to catch up with people, the gossip and the politics and what's happening. And by 7, I'm back home, have a nice bath, shower, or maybe read a book. And 9 o'clock, 8:30 is dinner time, 9 o'clock is lights off. So more or less every day is like this.
Every day is like that, okay.
Yes, unless of course there is some harvesting or sowing which has to be done, then maybe I would be spending more time on the field because I have to be with the labor. But otherwise, more or less, this is the schedule.
Actually, are you motivated by money then? What motivates you?
No. I'm not after money right now because, as you can see, there is no money in this. Okay, we grow stuff for ourselves, and whatever is in excess, we sell it off in Bombay to friends or to some shops, etc. But that's not a large amount of money. So money is not so important. I feel you need money only. I'll give you a simple example. The nearest theater from me is 30 kilometers away. So it's almost about 10 years or maybe more that I have actually seen a movie in a theater. So these kind of expenses are all not there at the farm. And you get the food from the farm. So actually, you don't need much money. Okay, I need money to pay the labor. And maybe a little bit for the electricity, for the power, and for my internet connection. That's it. So it's not much at all. And as far as your clothes and all go, there is, you just wear a pair of trunks and a t-shirt at the farm, and you don't wear anything else. So you don't need branded, you know, branded shoes or branded clothes at the village, you know. So I feel that when you stay in the city, let me tell you, my salary was also quite huge in the city. Yeah. And but it's so funny that even after having so much money, at the end of the month, we still depended on plastic money. So I feel that the more money you have, you spend the more. That's it. You will go on spending. There is no end to it. I doubt whether there's any person who says that enough, I have a lot of money. I don't think so. It's not possible.
You mentioned movies. This sounds like a movie to me.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I actually, you know, there is one person. He's actually a writer in the Indian film industry.
He
has written to me saying that would it be possible for him to buy the rights of the book to make it into a movie? Of course, knowing the film industry, he has not got back. But fine. I mean, let's hope it happens. We'll see.
Who would play you then?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Give me some names. Come on.
Well, actually, the one name that has cropped up when we were having this talk is a person called Akshay Kumar.
Okay.
He's a Bollywood star. And he sort of fits into this kind of a role, you know. So maybe they would go to him. I don't know. So that's up to the producer, not to me.
Sounds exciting.
Yes, of course it does. But
then you would have to go to watch that movie, right?
Yes, of course I will. I will make a trip to wherever it is. That's not a problem.
Okay. So last few questions then. What advice would you give to anyone thinking of, you know, quitting a job to do something like this?
Yes, there are a lot of people, Neil, who have asked me this question. People who have come here, people who have emailed me, people who have spoken to me. And initially, I used to be flummoxed, you know, because I didn't know what to answer. But over a period of time, I have come to a sort of an answer which I can give to this question. And that is, I feel you require 5 C's. That is the alphabet C. Okay. Mm-hmm. One is C for courage. Mm-hmm. Okay. You need courage to do something different. Then the other C is commitment. Mm-hmm. You need to be committed to what you want to do. The third one is conviction. You have to be convinced that this is the way I want to go. There is no point in having doubts and then going down some path. It doesn't work. You have to be sure. Yes, this is what I want to do. The next C is cooperation. You need cooperation of your family, of your friends, of your colleagues, because they are the ones who are going to give you the moral support. And last, of course, you need a little bit of capital. If you want to do something different, you want to start something, you need a little bit of money to at least kickstart. So these are the 5 C's. And besides these, of course, the famous P's are there too. You have to be persistent and you have to be patient. Mm-hmm. So this is the advice that I give all people, that if you have all these 5 C's, I'm sure whatever you do will be successful. It doesn't have to be farming. It can be anything. Mm-hmm. So actually,
you mentioned that you like reading books. Do you have any like favorite books? Any you can give our listeners some recommendations?
Oh, okay. See, I used to read a lot of fiction earlier, but now after I've got into this farming thing, most of the books that I read are related to farming. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I want to learn, I want to enhance my skills. So I generally try and read things which are related to farming. Of course, I also read a lot about trees, animals. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a lot of books on snakes and, you know, how to identify them, what to do if they bite you, what is their behavior. I need to know all that because that's what is happening here. So those are the kind of books I read. And off late, fiction has taken a backseat now because I really don't have much time. Though I do like P.D. James and, you know, these crime thrillers. But now I don't get much time to read that. So most of the time I'm reading farming books.
Have you been attacked by snakes?
No, but the person who works with me was.
Oh, okay.
Yes, he got bitten and it was, thankfully, it was just a dry bite. And though, of course, his toe is still swollen and slightly black. It was a Russell's viper, which is one of a very venomous snake in India. And I rushed him to the hospital and luckily it was not such a major thing. He was released the next day, but the wound is still there. So they're there. We have to be careful, that's all.
Mm-hmm. will you be writing any more books?
Oh, well, a lot of people are asking me that and also asking me to do one. One of the requests which has come is people feel that Moong Over Microchips is more about me and the transition. They say that there is no technical detail on farming. They want to know how to grow moong and, you know, how to grow groundnut. That is not there in the book. And I had put some of it in the book, but the publishers felt that it was too technical, you know, they edited it and they said, no, it doesn't form this book. This book is only about your adventure. So that's what I wrote. So now I'm thinking maybe it would be a good idea to write a more sort of a technical book, which gives details about how to actually do each crop and, you know, what are the tricks and tips and techniques that you can do. So maybe that's something I'll start working on.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to it. Last question. How can our listeners discover more about you and your books? What must they do?
Okay. Well, you know, I have given my email ID in the book and people are welcome to contact me if they need any, you know, information or whatever. And as far as books are concerned, well, most probably it will be Penguin, so they can keep track of Penguin. So they'll announce if if there is a book coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Venkat.
Yeah.
Venkat, thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Lee.
I wish you all the best, mate. Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thanks to Venkat for coming on the show today. And if you want to know more about the book, check out the link on the show notes. Thank you for supporting the podcast. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet @IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. I would love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.